Hi, Mom and Dad, and welcome to the FC Yahoo podcast. Here in the Playa Vista studios, my name is Shahan Ahmed, and I'm here with Joey Galino.
I don't even know what's going on right now.
And Alex Baker.
It's pronounced Firmino.
No, it's not.
Firmino.
Okay, we're going to get into that.
Firmino.
But before we get into that, let's set it up, okay? Liverpool, Man City. Now, we talked about this game last week, and we said, well, we kind of were leaning towards Man City. Joey was heavily leaning towards Man City.
I was pretty in on Man City.
And I was kind of going, I don't know, I think Liverpool might have a chance. I had a feeling that the game at Anfield anyway, that Liverpool would win. I didn't see a 3-0 coming at pretty much the 30-minute mark. First half hour, Liverpool ran rampant. And it was incredible to watch. We had, you know, Salah, Mane also. I won't continue the song because I'm an awful singer. But it was really, really fun to watch. Pep seemed to get it wrong. It was 3-0 at the end. No away goal, which is the biggest thing in this. First of all, we'll start with you, Alex. Is this tie dead?
It's got a pulse. It's got a faint pulse. And I think when the draw was first made, I was talking to Joey on Twitter about it, and you know, it was pretty clear, cut and dry, who the four teams that were going to get through were going to be. And I thought, okay, if there's an upset, it could be maybe in the Juve-Real game or in this one. So
it will not be in the Juve-Real game.
We know that now, that's for sure. That one's dead and buried. But yeah, like you, you know, I thought, okay, Liverpool maybe does have they have a chance. Certainly at Anfield, you would have backed them to win, but to win 3-0 and to win, just to see City perform the way they did, it was like the first goal just broke them. They were utterly, you know, they offered a little bit before that. There was a chance Kompany had that wasn't that far off, but
they actually held the ball pretty well in the beginning, and it seemed like they were playing in Liverpool's half.
But
in the beginning,
after the first goal, they couldn't put two passes together, and it was like, it was basically an unrecognizable team from the team that we've been watching all season, and from the team that we thought was probably going to be into the last four, and maybe some people could have projected them going all the way to the final and maybe being a favorite. I think our own Henry Bushnell has written that.
Come on.
But it was pretty shocking. It was pretty shocking.
He's young. I think he picked Arsenal to win one of these years, too.
Hey. kid's got good taste.
I guess I'll ask you, Joey. What the hell happened?
See, that's what's weird, because we always try to break down the matches just by nature. I'm struggling to kind of find an explanation for it. And yesterday, I had to rewatch it when I got back home, because I was actually down in Anaheim for the Angels game in the afternoon. And me and my friend walked into a bar restaurant beforehand to grab some lunch, and the Champions League games were on. And I saw that it was 3-0, like you said, inside of 30 minutes. And I let out an audible cuss word. I didn't mean to. I'm not usually like that. At least I don't think I am, guys. Am I?
Yeah.
And, you know, it made some people around us angry, but we both kind of were just shell-shocked by the scoreline and what happened. And when I got home and I rewatched it, you know, City was unrecognizable. Pep played kind of a weirder system than he usually does. It's not what we're used to seeing. They were giving the ball away left and right. It's like they had never seen this heavy metal gegenpressing that Jurgen Klopp does, which we know is false because Pep has seen it in other leagues and they've seen it in the Premier League when they match up with Liverpool. And I just, you know, you're right. After the first goal, and then after the second one especially, that Ox scored, Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain, that was a cracker, man. It really seemed to demoralize City and kind of shell-shock them. And, I mean, I guess that's the closest thing I can say. They were shell-shocked. Maybe they were overly influenced by this idea of, you know, Anfield on a European night. But you have to give Liverpool credit, because yesterday was a cauldron, and it looked very difficult, like a very difficult atmosphere to play in.
Well, and we know Liverpool can attack like that. No one's really surprised to go and see them score three goals, I don't think. But the way that they...
The least of all City. They scored four against City earlier.
Yeah, that's the thing. They're absolutely capable of doing that. But the way they sat back and defended, and the way they just kept City from even mounting anything, that even City did not lay a finger on them for the next hour. And you've got to take your hat off to Alexander Arnold, who had Sané in his pocket, to Virgil van Dijk, who just basically bullied Jesus Navas away from anything like a sniff at goal.
And that's not really Gabriel Jesus.
Who did I say?
Jesus Navas.
We'll talk about him.
I was talking about Jesus.
Former City player.
I'm crossing my games together. Yes, sorry. Gabriel Jesus.
Jesus, actually. He's Brazilian. You pronounce the J.
Mr. Brazilian.
We're doing a lot of pronunciation things.
Yeah, right. So let's get into this linguistics, okay?
It's Portuguese with Shahan.
Welcome to the
Linguistics Yahoo podcast.
I've been to Brazil twice and Portugal. And, well, first of all, just to clarify, it is Jesus because you pronounce the J's like Jose Mourinho. It's not Jose, even though people get it wrong in England still. He's been there for like 15 years back and forth, but whatever. And they always say Firmino because they're used to saying Coutinho. It's Firmino. There's no Inho. It would actually be written as I-N-H-O if it was. So I know people like to say Firmino. The Scousers can say it, but they're wrong. But more to the point, Liverpool was really good.
Send your tweets from Liverpool to at Shahan LA on Twitter.
Don't tell them who I am. This is for our mothers and fathers only. I guess it was weird because, first of all, Pep had Laporte playing left.
Yeah.
That was, in and of itself, I was like, wait, what is going on here? He didn't start Sterling.
For Gundogan, too, which kind of like, it was their formation out of
and
bounds.
Gundogan was pretty much told to kind of stay back, it seemed like. It was a very odd setup that was designed to stop Liverpool from doing exactly what Liverpool did. So whatever Pep was trying, it did not work.
Yeah, maybe that's the key. Maybe he just unlocked it. It's like you expect City, you know, when you're a club like we thought they might be, and they still might be, on the level of Real Madrid now, Barcelona, whatever, you know, these elite clubs that are in the Champions League semifinals and finals every year, they don't ever go somewhere kind of sitting back to, like, protect the point necessarily, you know? You would think that Man City would have that kind of same attitude and not be overly cautious. Not saying they'd throw caution to the wind, but they wouldn't, you know, they'd look to attack too. They didn't, and I just don't get it. They didn't take the game to Liverpool.
Maybe he just learned something from Jose. The wrong thing. Jose is not in the competition.
It was well out of character, for Guardiola to sort of play it kind of safe.
Yeah.
I mean, by Guardiola standards.
Out of character is a good way to put it, I think.
They kind of set up a little bit negative. It was like he didn't have faith in his own footballing kind of ethos. You know, and maybe you could argue like, okay, in a game like this, maybe you ought not to try to play the ball out the back every time from the goalkeeper because that wasn't really doing them any favors. But yeah, going with Gundogan in there and kind of more of a holding role as opposed to putting in Sterling, there were just some weird decisions. You got to say that Pep got it wrong and
wrong.
That Jurgen Klopp got it absolutely 100% right.
Well, it wasn't just Jurgen. I mean, the players got it right. You looked at Liverpool's midfield, like Ox, Henderson, Milner. James Milner played incredibly well. I was, you know, looking around, reading some stuff. There are a lot of people who are saying that should be England's starting midfield for the World Cup.
Mm-hmm. Milner, yeah, there's a whole Bring Milner Back campaign on Twitter yesterday.
Yeah, but if you're going to take Hendo anyway, and you kind of need Ox's athleticism, he seems to be in the squad. If you have, I mean, it makes sense if you wanted to play a three-man midfield, if you actually use that formation, why wouldn't you take those three? It makes a lot of sense. You know, an old Liverpool great, John Arne Arisa, he actually said, this was his tweet yesterday, 100% sure that Virgil van Dijk coming to the club has raised the level of defending and the focus on how to defend as a team. Everybody has raised their game in the back since he joined. Proves that having a great leader lifts the team. And then he mentions Carragher and Sammy. So is it as simple as van Dijk showed up and they learned how to play in the back? They got sorted? Van Dijk was actually really what they were missing because Lovren was good yesterday too, and he took a lot of flack early in the season.
Yeah.
Karius didn't have to do anything.
But I would say that certainly has been a huge boost.
Yeah, it seems like it has. And if you recall, like his first few outings with Liverpool were actually, you know, they brought out the vitriol, the fans, so to speak. But, you know, ever since then, there does seem to be. Look, are we confusing them with like a prime Chelsea defense or anything like that? No, but at least they're competent back there now. And with the way they attack, that's a dangerous proposition for anybody playing them.
Yeah, I mean, you think about the Dortmund teams, and they had some strong central defenders. You know, think about Nevan Subotic and
Hummels.
Mats Hummels. Those were like, that was kind of what made Dortmund work. And that's why they made the Champions League final. That's why they won the Bundesliga. You know, you had those two guys that really kind of sorted Klopp's back line. And as much as, you know, once he got to Liverpool, he didn't really have that. And it's what was lacking. And now, seemingly, you know, it really seems like it just took Van Dijk to get it together. And at this point, I agree with you, Alex, that there is a pulse. It's not much of a pulse because they didn't get the away goal. I think the pulse is whether or not Mo Salah is actually healthy. Because, you know, he did go off. True. Seemed to be okay, but he went off early. It was due to injury. It wasn't because it was a tactical thing. If he's not there for the second leg in a week's time, then I'm not sure that Liverpool gets a goal at the Etihad. If they get a goal at the Etihad, City has scored five.
Yeah.
And I mean, City can score five because, whoa, they actually scored five against Liverpool at the Etihad earlier in the season. And that was a 5-0, mind you. Yeah. So City could turn it on. The one thing I will say is that City's fans notoriously are just like not great when it comes to the Champions League.
The empty head.
And coming back down 3-0, I could see a lot of them just not showing up for this. And even if they show up, not really giving the team what it needs, which is you got to really press them forward because they got to go out and score minimum three.
Score three,
Minimum three. And more than likely, more than like five or six, frankly, because Liverpool is probably getting another goal. They're just, that's the way they are. But along with that 5-0, I will say, away, Liverpool has also lost 4-1 to Spurs this season. So they have given, and that was away, obviously. So they have given up a couple big losses. But again, the loss to City, the 5-0, was in September. It's a completely different Liverpool side. Like we said, Van Dijk's made a huge difference. Karius is back in goal and looks to be okay. He's been fine. You know, Salah's continued forward on a different level. They're understanding the front three's worked out better. Ox is with the team. It is a different style of Liverpool. I personally am not betting on City. You could give me really good odds and I still wouldn't bet on them. But I don't think they're dead.
They're not. I mean, out of all the teams in this competition, I think the two that you could say would be capable of coming back from this would probably be City and well, there's a few that would be. City, Barcelona.
Real Madrid.
Okay, there's four. Bayern. Barcelona, Bayern.
everyone is here for a reason, obviously, but yeah.
But is this a symptom, and I know they haven't won the title yet, but they could win it this weekend. Is this a symptom of what we've seen with Guardiola teams since he left Barcelona, particularly at Bayern, where they win the season, they win the title by March or April, and then something about the team, they just start to go a little bit off. They're a little bit, one foot's on the beach, kind of.
Do you think
it's any kind of symptom of that?
I don't think so, because I think that the City's still been really good overall.
Yeah.
I think that this is just, it's one of those things where Pep got it wrong. He didn't pick the right team. He didn't set his team up to do what they've done all year. He didn't go with the front three. He didn't have Aguero, obviously, and that kind of makes a bit of a difference. He went with Gabriel Jesus, and Jesus has been, he hasn't been to the same level yet that he was super early in the season or last season. So that may have played a role. But, I mean, Sané wasn't really that good, and Sané's been really good.
De Bruyne was one of the worst games I've seen all season.
De Bruyne has actually kind of dipped down as the season progressed.
He has, for sure.
He'll probably win PFA because they had voted in it way too early, and that's just kind of the nature of the thing, even though Mo Salah deserves it, in my opinion. Yeah. Without a doubt, I think he's been the best player in the Premier League.
Yeah, I think that's pretty much without question at this point.
And in terms of it being a symptom, I don't think it is either. And I think that's partially what made this so shocking, because we all know that Pep wasn't really brought here to win the Premier League. Yes, that's the second thing that they want primarily. But he's here to win the Champions League. And in a Champions League game where all the players know the stakes and they know what the club wants, and that's the stated goal now, to see this was just shocking. So I don't know if it was symptomatic. I just think, Klopp got it right, and you got to give him credit.
I will say the one thing to look forward to is that the second leg, it promises goals because City's got to
go for it. They're going to be open.
It's like for a match that's going back 3-0. This is going to be the most fun match to watch because you got a team going home that is, you know, been the best team in England by nature attacks, and they're going up against a team that also by nature attacks. So we could see, you know, a 6-3 scoreline. I'm not saying who's going to score the six and who's going to score the three, but we could genuinely see something like that. And it's going to be, you know, you got to tune in for that match as opposed to your other option, which is Barcelona versus Roma. Now, this match had a little bit of controversy, too. It ended up, speaking of controversy, we should mention the first goal. Salah did look like he was slightly offside on the initial.
He did.
Yep. He seemed like he was just past the halfway line, and he wasn't able to hold his run. But, hey, it's not like City deserved that call, frankly. they didn't deserve it for the next two goals that they gave up either, and Ox still with the beam that definitely resonates.
Great goal. Yeah. My goodness.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow.
It seems like it's in his genes or something. but going back to the point where I was trying to get to, Barcelona won 4-1 against Roma at the Camp Nou, and this game was a little bit more interesting in that it had two own goals and two missed penalties. Alex, what do you make of the penalty decisions?
Yeah, to clarify by missed penalties, you mean penalties that weren't called?
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
Not blocked penalties or penalties where they go up to row Z, a la Sergio Ramos. We're talking about penalties where they seemed like they were penalties. First of all, both of you guys, were there two penalties? Or should they have been given?
I think I think they should have been given. I don't want to get into the whole conspiracy of Barcelona at home.
In the Champions League? I've never heard of this.
I never heard that conspiracy. But
tell me more.
I mean, those are two penalties. Those are two penalties that were not given. And I think Roma fans have every right to feel a bit hard done by that they weren't given. So, you know, you look at the scoreline, and it's kind of what you'd predict for Barcelona versus Roma at the Camp Nou. You think, yeah, Barca's going to dominate. They're going to win 3-1, 4-2, 4-1, as it were. But it doesn't really tell the story because, yeah, they were denied those penalties and they got kind of lucky on a couple own goals. And granted, Barcelona is a team that will always capitalize on your mistakes, which they did. But, yeah, I think the penalty calls they're contentious. Sorry, the lack of. And that's, you know, there's a little bit of an asterisk on this one going forward.
De Rossi with a hell of a finish.
Beautiful on goal. I mean, you take your shirt off for that kind of goal normally if you get into your own net.
Not this time, unfortunately. I think the theme, was kind of like with this it's a bit similar to Sevilla, which we'll talk about here in a second as well. You know, the Roma and Sevilla were kind of universally seen as the two weakest sides left in the competition, especially Sevilla. But I actually thought they both gave a pretty good account of themselves. And, you know, it's just kind of shows you how fine the margins are when you get this far, that Roma could have so much go against it and kind of be very unlucky in several spots. And now the tie is basically over because, you know, you don't expect Roma to score, you know, what would they need, five or something, four?
I mean, they
got an away goal.
They need to score.
3-0 would
3-0
would
do it.
But then again, all they got to do is do a 3-0 against Barca.
Yeah, all they got to do, that's it.
But when you look at it, if they got those two penalty calls, and it's a 4-3, all of a sudden it's like, wow, they got three away goals?
Yeah.
That's huge.
That's huge deal.
Gargantuan.
Yeah. So it did really make a difference in terms of this tie being dead versus not being dead, because does anyone think Barcelona is going to lose 3-0 or lose by three goals when they go to the Olympico?
No.
That's the problem. Against another team, you might be like, wow, that was unlucky. Roma, you know, they're still in this. Against Barcelona, I don't know. Against, Real Madrid, I don't know. And that's unfortunately who they're playing.
And it's kind of the theme of this week. It's kind of been lopsided scores.
I was thinking we got goals in this Champions League round of eight so far. That's pretty good.
I mean, Jose's gone, so of course. but I guess we can move on to the goal that everybody's been talking about since we're talking about goals. The bike.
The bike seen and heard around the world.
Yeah, Cristiano Ronaldo even the build-up to that goal, first of all. For him to get down to the end line, hit that ball across, and then Buffon to make that incredible diving save when he was so out of position for him to recover. And then he's back perfectly in position when the ball comes in, and Ronaldo with the perfect bicycle kick. Mm-hmm. This was not a Rooney off your shins bicycle kick. This was entirely like as clean as you can hit it unstoppable, Buffon rooted, and he's a giant man who looked nowhere near the ball.
And within, you know, a very fine set of, what do you call it, like parameters, like, because his foot comes very close to kicking the defender in the face. But he was the way the technique was, and it was perfect. And you guys saw the photos making the rounds that he practiced this kind of kick in training as recently as Monday, and he probably, you know, practices it more often than that. If you do that enough, then you're going to be able to kind of pull something off like that. And you're right, the form was just outstanding. And when that happened, you know, you talk about City being deflated by a goal. Juve probably was just like, wow, we're still, you know, we don't have that guy. Like, we don't have this collection of talent.
Well, Mandzukic did it in the final, I mean, something similar.
Yeah, right, he started on the bench, and Dybala just did not have it.
Nothing. No. Nothing.
No.
He gave a very poor account of why he should be on the plane to Russia. This was not. This is one of those when you say Sampaoli didn't pick him for the international break. Okay, well, Jorge, maybe you got this one right.
Yeah,
because Dybala just. I mean, they couldn't do anything. Juve got outplayed, and you know, I was sitting there going, why is Real Madrid so damn good in this competition?
I think I know why.
Probably should save this for a column, but hey, we're on the podcast. Hey, mom and dad, listen up. It's because they don't have any squad turnover. I mean, you look at the guys, that team that started, it's the same team that started the Champions League final. Mm-hmm. Nobody left. Who did they get rid of? James Rodriguez? Who didn't play? They never played him in any big games. And then you say, who have they lost in the last 2 years? Danilo, who was, frankly, a reserve fullback for them, who played some midfield, but really he was a reserve. And Pepe, who they replaced with Varane, and really Varane was out injured and in and out, but he's a better central defender than Pepe currently. Other than that, everybody's the same.
Mm-hmm.
It's the exact. I mean, Isco and Bale will switch off depending on how healthy Bale is.
Yeah.
Yesterday he was healthy, and they still went with Isco, and Isco was great. I mean, all in all, when you look at it, it's a very like you can pick Real Madrid's team and say, wow, these guys, like, you pretty much know who they're going to pick. And then you add in, they haven't lost anybody, and they've really only added and started incorporating guys like Kovacic, Asensio, Lucas Vazquez. You start seeing, you're like, okay, their squad is slightly expanding, but when the big games come, it's the same guys. Mm-hmm. And that's why they always show up.
I think you're on to something with that. And I also think that this competition plays to Zidane's strengths as a manager, because he's not that experienced as a manager, and we've seen him struggle in the league. The week-in, week-out grind of La Liga, that might not be his forte as a manager at this point, but getting these guys up. They were showing his halftime talk from the Champions League final on Fox the day before the game, and it was a great talk, and you could just see that this is a guy.
What language is it in?
He was speaking English in the talk. Hmm. Or it was translated. I don't know. Or there were subtitles. I don't know. I understood. I can't remember now.
You understood.
I was sort of half watching.
Like, I understood.
The game started,
yeah. I was just curious because I'm like, you're in Spain, but you look around.
You're French.
Yeah. In the dressing room. I think he was speaking English.
I mean, you're French, and you look around, and you're like, that guy's from Brazil. That guy's from Portugal.
Right.
That guy's from France. Right. Like, it's like, what language do we go
do
with?
Do we talk in?
Like, sorry, go on.
But anyway, I do think that this is a competition that. That he's just been—he's dominated. He's basically dominated it
as a
manager,
like nobody else.
He's dominated, and regardless of their up and down in La Liga, he still just owns this competition with this team. And
I will say, I disagree with you that he's not a manager for La Liga because he won La Liga with them last year. And so to say, like to throw it out like that, I just think that this year they weren't properly, you know, set up. They lost La Liga pretty early on, and it was. Partly because Barcelona is still unbeaten in La Liga.
Yeah.
Like, it's kind of hard to keep pace with somebody who refuses to lose. That said, I just think that he knows how to, if anything, more than anything, he knows how to manage Ronaldo. He'll take him out in La Liga and be like, nope, you're not playing.
Mm-hmm.
And he'll leave him out just to keep him healthy. He didn't play on the weekend going to the Champions League.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you would say coming off an international break, you want to get him back going and everything. He's like, nope. Zidane's like, no, he'll be ready. And he was. Ronaldo scored in, what was it, the third minute?
Mm-hmm.
Incredible flick. Yeah. Perfect ball in from Isco. Like I said, he played well. Real Madrid has the match winners when it counts. And Ronaldo being premier on that list. You look at the squad turnover, though. I mean, look at the other teams that they're playing against.
Mm-hmm.
Every single one.
Yeah. I made that point last year when we were reacting to the Champions League final. It was, I think, of the three Champions League finals that they've won in the last 4 years, five players, almost half the side, started all three, and then another eight featured in at least two of the matches. So the turnover is not that big, you're right. And the other thing about Zidane, and I think that sometimes this is kind of an easy collection of points to make, but I think it kind of rings true here. When you're managing a club like Real Madrid, one of the biggest in the world, with one of the biggest dressing rooms full of egos, they're going to respond, I would imagine, to a guy they grew up watching as one of the finest players of his generation. Now, you know, the other great managers in the game, let's say like Pep Guardiola, Carlo Ancelotti, Antonio Conte, you know, they were perfectly fine players in their own right, but they didn't have that pedigree of Zidane, who not only, you know, was kind of like this godlike figure when he played and arguably the finest player of his generation, he also had experience. I think he was in the Juve side that won in 1996. He was in the Real Madrid Galacticos side that won the Champions League a couple times. And I think that there's just this credibility there that you don't necessarily have, like, you know, if you're a player and you're mad in training at your manager and you look at him and you're like, well, what did he ever do, you know, in the game? You can't do that with Zidane, because if he does something, I think he's earned their trust and been like, wow, you know, not only have we won consistently with you managing us like this, but you have that pedigree. And I think that helps too.
Yeah, I can't think of another player turned manager with that kind of stature.
Ancelotti was okay.
I was going to say Johan Cruyff, really, because I don't think Ancelotti was ever quite at that level of, like, he was a good player.
I mean, he was a great striker for Milan. I mean, it's a big club, and then he went on to win Champions League.
Did he ever win the Ballon d'Or? Was he ever the greatest player of his era?
I mean, Zidane is a different level, right?
Yeah, no, that's what I mean. As far as players who've been successful managers, I can really only put him in the Cruyff category. I can't think of another who was that great of a player and went on to be, you know, top manager.
Others
as well
have tried it, you know, at a lesser level. Didn't Pele, like, manage the New York Cosmos or something for
a couple
years?
Not,
like,
come on.
No, that's what I'm saying. Like, there's no example of, like, a top 10 player of all time, other than, you could argue, Cruyff, doing what Zidane is doing with a club of this stature. You know, like, I think Maradona,
Maradona.
Oh, sorry, Maradona. Maradona. This is going back. Now it's in my head.
He managed Brazil.
Now it's in my head.
Argentina, sorry.
He did, yeah.
Yeah, but that wasn't...
Not the same thing.
At the World Cup.
But successfully, I mean...
I mean, it was relatively successful until they showed up against Germany.
Germany, yeah.
I think the one thing about... I like that you brought that up, because I was just actually going to go to the 2006 World Cup in particular. And I think the fact is that these guys remember watching Zidane play. It's not like he's some old guy that they didn't see.
It's not grainy footage
or something. Like, every single one of these guys was not just alive. They were, like, conscious enough to recognize that, hey, this guy was the best player in the World Cup.
A couple of the guys on the Juve team were in the game.
Yeah.
They were in the freaking game where he headbutted Materazzi. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, Buffon being one of them.
Yeah.
It's
Barzagli, I think, two.
Anyway. It's just very interesting to, like, that dynamic for sure, but it is a rare thing for a player that great to go on and be a manager this great.
Mm-hmm.
And I do think the respect factor is definitely there. I do think that, you know, we were talking about some of the turnover for Real Madrid. Casemiro is the one that stands out, right?
Mm-hmm.
More than anything else. Like, Casemiro from the first Champions League. But then you actually look at it and you think, when they won with Ancelotti, Zidane was an assistant.
He was,
So even the messaging going into the players' heads and where it's coming from isn't really all that different. There's been so much stability for a club that traditionally is not known for stability on the pitch with the personnel and in terms of the, like, tactical decisions and stuff coming through. Because it's, you know, there's been a slight change, and Casemiro's been a revelation for that team. But all in all, like, it's still Benzema, it's still Bale, it's still Ronaldo, it's still Toni Kroos, it's still Modric, it's still Sergio Ramos, it's still, you know, Marcelo. You just go down the line. It's all the same guys.
And I think the midfield is also key, because Casemiro, for sure, he kind of allows the attack to operate with the freedom it does because of all the plays he can make and all the ground he can cover. Luka Modric, lest we forget, was fifth, I think, last year in the Ballon d'Or voting. So he's been fantastic. Toni Kroos has been a perfect fit since signing from Bayern Munich. And you don't really, I guess we don't really talk about them as much as we should, because BBC is obviously this world famous attack. Ronaldo's amazing. The defenders, as your favorite Sergio Ramos corollary, you know, the Pepe and Sergio Ramos, they're great defenders, but they're also a little controversial and outspoken.
I think Sergio got the record for most yellow cards.
Yep, he set the record the other day for most yellow cards.
In the Champions League?
No.
Or in the history of soccer?
I honestly.
Both, probably.
Yeah. I'm sure he owns
all
both.
Of the above.
Yeah. Sergio Ramos, you just yellow. I hope he becomes a referee.
That would be amazing.
But second yeah, like, career.
See, that's what we're joking about it, but it's like, it's true. Like, they're loud mouths in the back. Excuse me. The attack is all time great. You know, it seems like there's nearly a constant story about, is Keylor Navas good enough in goal?
Yes.
Iker Casillas was screwed by Jose Mourinho.
Yes.
Are they going to sign De Gea at some point? So there's drama like everywhere else. But yeah,
probably not.
In the midfield, there is consistency. There's just this machine like, you know, it's not tiki taka, but it's sort of like that kind of air. You know, they're always in the team. They always play well. They always play well together. And it's helped them, you know, achieve unprecedented heights in the Champions League era.
Yeah, I can still not tell who's better, Toni Kroos or Luka Modric. Game to game,
that's
I'm like,
a good thing.
I'm like, both these guys, like, they're so in sync. They're so crucial to what Real Madrid does. And they've won 3 Champions Leagues in the last 4 years. And I don't know who I give more credit to, because they're both that elite level of midfielder.
Can you think of is there a better midfield pairing anywhere right now?
Well, I would say it's not just pairing. It's Casemiro's got to be included in there as well. And I think you also include Isco, because with those 4, it's the best midfield in Europe. And you look at the other competitors, you know, a team like Barcelona, how much turnover have they had?
They've had quite a bit.
Yeah, it's funny. For their midfield is not really the thing that works about them right now.
Well, forget midfield. Like, even an attack,
not
everything.
Barca standards.
Yeah,
anyway.
It's for sure.
Yeah.
But I mean, Busquets has kind of had a resurgence this year, and Iniesta has been better this year. It's played into why they've been better has been the midfield. That said, and, you know, Paulinho to some extent, Dembele, in league, it's definitely played more of a role in terms of their midfield helping them bounce back. But when you actually look at it in terms of just the understanding, and this is a team sport, there's been so much more turnover and all the, like, that's why right now, if you ask me, gun to my head, who I pick to win the Champions League, I cannot, like, it's Real Madrid's got to have the edge.
Yeah. It's hard not to pick them.
And Barcelona is unbeaten in league, beat Real Madrid, and frankly, unbeaten in Champions League too, looking like they're going to cruise in the semifinals. Messi's still the best player in the world.
Sure.
And don't get me wrong, that's not hate on Cristiano Ronaldo, because Cristiano Ronaldo is probably the greatest goal scorer of all time. So you like look at it and you break it down, you're like, it's very close, but just based on the fact of continuity, I kind of have to give the edge to Real Madrid.
I do too, and I'll tell you, I think Messi is the greatest player of all time, but for the last few years, Ronaldo's been the guy who's shown up for the big finals and the big games. And even with Portugal, when he didn't play, he was still on the sidelines, kind of willing them on in a way that I don't know that you'd see Messi doing that. There's something about Ronaldo.
Messi put his hands in his head, or his head in his hands during the international break when he was watching Argentina play.
Yeah. Well,
but you know what?
Did.
But there were reports that afterwards he went in the locker room, and he actually went early down the locker room and waited for them, and then he basically like really encouraged his teammates and was very vocal. So he understands his leadership role there. This is definitely his Barcelona team. He's the leader of this team, no doubt. And no disrespect to Andres Iniesta on that one, but this is Messi's team. He's carried Barcelona where they are now. So anything they do will be him. But I think when you look at just overall, it's hard to say that Real Madrid is going to get knocked out by anybody.
I don't think they are. And just to kind of to wrap this up on my end, I think that what kind of has allowed Real Madrid to be consistent is also kind of a downfall is the wrong word to use with Barcelona, because they're certainly still one of the best clubs in the world. But they were so reliant for so long on that kind of golden triangle of Sergio Busquets, Xavi and Iniesta, and they're all kind of, I mean, I guess Busquets, he was younger than him, but like them in Spain, kind of like their declines, if you will. Again, there's not a big decline we're talking here, but it happened when they aged out a little bit. And Real Madrid is not necessarily relying on the same group of national teamers. They got like this whole collection of midfielders. You know, they've been there for a long time and they've been consistent, like I said. But they're also being better about planning for the future. You know, you're saying that they're incorporating Isco, they're incorporating Kovacic, like
Asensio.
Yeah, Asensio. They're doing a better job, I feel like, of, you know, a token Ivan Rakitic signing, for example. Not that he's not a really good player, but I don't know. I just think that there's been a better plan for them going forward. And I think the simple thing also to say is the reason there's been stability at the club is because they keep winning the damn Champions League. We know that Florentino Perez, right, would probably, I don't know, maybe make a power move if they didn't. But, you know.
We were talking about Zidane getting sacked.
We were.
Yeah,
a lot of people were.
Yeah,
like it's and it, they were playing poorly enough that genuinely you're like, is he going to get sacked? And I was like, hey, you won the Champions League 2 years in a row. You probably shouldn't until the Champions League's over. At least right. At this point, I don't care what happens. I'm keeping Zidane around.
Yeah,
it's crazy. Well, there's one game we haven't talked about.
It'll be quick.
It's Bayern versus Sevilla. Which was a pretty competitive game, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Ultimately, Bayern pulled through. But Sevilla, you know, I believe they took the lead. It was 1-1 for most of the night.
It was.
And then eventually, Bayern did what Bayern does. Joey?
Yeah, I think, you know, it's just, if anything, I know Bayern won the tie, and I know that they got two away goals, and I know that they're the overwhelming favorites to advance. But I was actually kind of impressed with Sevilla because, you know, again, I think a lot of us were like, this is the team that least is the least threatening that's left in the quarterfinals. And, you know, maybe there's an argument to be made they shouldn't be here. I'm not necessarily making that. But, you know, them beating United was unexpected. And I don't know if they didn't hear that talk or whatever, maybe use that as motivation against Bayern, because they actually gave a pretty good account of themselves. They were pretty unlucky with the Bayern with the first goal because Ribery played a ball in that deflected off Jesus Navas and it wrong-footed the goalkeeper, Soria. So, and then the second goal was very nice header by Thiago Alcantara. But, I mean, my ultimate takeaway is I give Sevilla credit for the way that they played, even though obviously they lost.
This is the same Sevilla side that last weekend was up 2-0 in Barcelona.
Yeah.
And it took like Messi miracle off the bench to draw 2-2.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in a vacuum, you say that's a one-off. In a vacuum, the United results a one-off, or the two United results you can take as a one-off, because we know Jose's tactics were completely off. But if you take those two into account and you take into how they played against Bayern,
mm-hmm.
you can't really say that Sevilla's not deserving of what they're doing, where they are.
Yeah, and here's something that I think is interesting to keep an eye on. I wish Sevilla was a better goal-scoring side because they actually have the second-best defensive record in Europe's top five leagues away this year. So it's not going to be a walk in the park, I don't think. I don't think you're going to see like a 4-5-0 Bayern score, and I'll probably be wrong about that.
The
like,
Allianz
about
is
everything.
A dangerous
but
place.
It's a dangerous place, but, you know, I don't know. I'm a believer that Sevilla is going to keep this competitive, but ultimately Bayern goes through.
Yeah, I'm kind of in the same thought process. But, hey, who knows? What's crazy is that of all the ties, that's the one that's like most alive.
Yeah.
The one that we were like, oh, there's no chance this is going to do anything. Yeah. It's like, that's the one that really is, logically speaking, the most alive. We're saying City is alive, but, I mean, they got to really pull a rabbit out of a hat to make that, like, completely turn it over. They got to, you know, go Neymar on PSG
in both ways.
I don't think it's that alive, to be honest. But I do think, yeah. I do agree that Sevilla, look, they've shown that they belong here. I mean, they beat Man United to get here. They gave Bayern a pretty hard time, like, you know. It wasn't easy. It wasn't comfortable for them.
Yeah.
It wasn't easy for them.
It'll be interesting to see how they hold up in the second leg, but, I mean, they got nothing to lose, and and they've shown that they can rise to the occasion. Doesn't matter. They're not scared of the opposition. I would not count out Sevilla in this one. I think Juve is dead.
Can we talk about Juve for a minute? We were talking about how great Real Madrid were, but how bad were you? I mean, this is a team that we sort of come to associate with being maybe the best defending team in this competition at these latter stages. And they were just cut apart so easily.
It's because Real Madrid was so damn really good. Yeah. They were unplayable. Like,
yeah.
Ronaldo's goal, like the way that that happened, it's like the first goal. I'm not even talking about the bicycle kick. For him to have, you know, to make that run, which was a very late run for that ball coming in, such great understanding to know where to be for that ball, and then to touch to put in the side netting. Like, that crushed Juve.
Mm-hmm.
You could see. Yeah. You're like, oh, they're in Turin. Yeah. It's like not even 5 minutes into the match, they're down a goal. It's like, wow, we gave up the away goal, and this is going to be a long night. And then when the bicycle happened, they were done. It was over.
This is a really easy point to make, but I think I'm going to make it anyway because I'm nothing if not lazy. Man, the hubris that came with Juventus selling Leonardo Bonucci last summer – I don't know if he makes like that big of a three-goal difference or whatever, but when he was on point for Juve, I think that's where their defense – they've still been good on defense, but you know, that was when they were basically like a fortress against everybody not named Real Madrid. So I wonder, you know, none of us were really sure why that transfer happened. And, I mean, nominally we saw the explanations from the club and stuff like that and the player, but it just didn't make too much sense. And Juve kind of being arrogant enough to think that they could do that and have their defense be exactly the same. I just, you know, this is the kind of thing that makes me curious. Like, what difference would he have made? Again, Real Madrid, it's tough to bet against them, but man, when you get ripped apart like that, you got to ask questions.
Yeah. Well, Juve is more than likely going to win Serie A now, so.
Yeah. They're still flying. Yeah. Yeah. And Milan is out of the Europa League and probably not going to the Champions League.
Yeah. Well, in any case, so I think that wraps it up. I think the second legs, we've laid out what we think is going to happen. They're going to come pretty quick, and then we're going to have the draw. Now, I was hoping for Liverpool-Man City for this exact reason, for the quarterfinals. And I told you guys before, I'm hoping for Real Madrid versus Barcelona in the semis because I want to see three El Clasicos in a 10-day period. And that is how we get that to happen. On the other side, I mean, Bayern versus Liverpool, Klopp versus Bayern.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty good story there.
Be interesting.
I would love cities to. Would be interesting too if there were to be.
Yeah, you know. Either way, I mean, let's just that's what I'm hoping for. But who knows what will happen? We'll next time we talk, we'll probably be around the time the draw is going down. So for Joey Gallino, for Alex Baker, this has been Shahan Ahmed. Thank you for listening.
The Champions.
Brought to you by Heineken. The Champions.
Heineken is what sponsored the fight with LAFC fans. I almost got it on Saturday after the game.
That is actually going to stay in there. That is going to be what ends this podcast for sure.